My name is Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
Today we have a special guest in the house, Warren Bernard from Small Press Expo. We've kayfabers know him from the visits we've taken to his palatial estates to look through his amazing library of comics. We did a shoot interview, one of the earliest shoot interviews with Warren Bernard. He's the grand poobah of the Small Press Expo. And today we're doing a motherfucking CGC snuff film.
Yes!
We promote comic book reading, and nothing inhibits comic book reading more than slabbing your four all-in-color for a dime funnies.
You know, as you know, when I got this, all right, I was just about to crack it open, and I sent you guys an email. You know, would you be interested in, like, cracking this open on Cartoonist Kayfabe? And you were like, yes, we have to do this. So, you know, this is only a 4.0 book, all right, or supposedly only a 4.0 book, believe it or not. Grades are, shall we say, not as consistent as one would like within the CGC neighborhood.
There's no SEC regulations on
grading
of comic books.
not in the least. And also, they have run into the same problems they ran into in the coin world. And that's where this whole thing about grading came from, was the coin world, okay?
And even the terminology, mint condition.
Right, oh yeah, sure. And by the way, can you really spot the difference between a 9.0 and a 9.2? All right, it's the same thing with MS-64, MS-65, MS-66 in the coin world. All right, the bottom line is you're strictly at the behest of whoever the hell it was that had that book in front of you at that time.
If they got laid the night before.
If
you slid them some weed.
And there are all kinds of stories out there about people resubmitting, getting two grades higher. I mean, the lack of consistency is actually pretty fucking mind-boggling, okay? So, I've elected to go ahead and take this thing out because, one, you know, if this was a mint copy, okay, you got me. I'm not going to go ahead and break out a mint copy.
We're going to cut that part out. Keep going.
Yeah, right. But, you know, this is like a VG book, even though I think it's undergraded, but that's a whole other story for another time. And I don't know about you, but I like reading my comic books.
Warren, do you hear it? It wants to breathe.
Yes, right, exactly. Okay, so it's going to take a few minutes for us to get it out of here. So, and by the way,
if this is some Julia Child, like, you know, step-by-step on how to liberate comics, man, like, talk us through the process, man.
Well, I'm not an expert. By the way, I've watched every video out there, okay? Uh-huh. And there's like, I think, 6 or 7 videos about how to crack open a CGC case. This is the only one that's a Golden Age comic. Okay, all the others were Bronze Age and Silver Age comics. This is the only one, Golden Age. Yes, I know there's going to be a whole bunch of people out there that are going to clutch their pearls in sheer horror that someone is actually breaking a Golden Age comic out of a CGC case.
We'll make readers out of them eventually.
So, the first thing you have to do is you've got to, like, find a seam.
As best you can.
There we go.
I like that crunch.
That makes two of us. And you have to save this thing here just in case, just in case I ever want to, which I won't, but if I ever did want to go ahead and get regraded, I would resubmit it with this so that they would know what the hell it was that went wrong.
Kayfabers, don't worry. We're all wearing the proper eyewear. And if we sound a little muffled, it's because we're wearing our Cobra masks.
Right. All right. Come on. I'm trying to both open this and keep it. There we go. And
what was exciting to you about this issue?
Well, let me get it out. Ah, there we go.
Yeah, and listen, it's breathing. It's breathing.
You know something? Did you hear that that came out of it?
Yeah, it sighed. It's gasping.
Right. So let me put all this to the side. All right. So now we have a second thing. So it is enclosed in here. So this is actually going to be, let me see. There we go. See, now I have to cut it.
Here, show it on the camera. Like, you always gotta.
Yeah, so now I have to cut it all along this line.
I see.
And then it'll slip out.
I see.
Okay, so before we do that, because it's gonna take some concentration, the reason why I got this book is that I'm looking at this, and I've been trying to find some, now this was not a cheap one, but I've been trying to find some cheap Golden Age, for World War II Golden Age, with nice covers and stuff for my collection. You know, I've got a big World War II collection. And so I'm looking at this and going, wow, this is really weird. Because these planes here...
You know what? We should crack it open, because it's just not so visible with the machine.
Okay. All right. So, try not to cut into my comic book.
Yeah. See, that's a very adventurous cut right there. I don't think I would have done that one.
So, I'm not the best at this, but...
It's like surgery here, Warren.
Yeah, I know. I have a buddy who's a surgeon. I could have used his skills.
Every time I see the CGC slab, I think of that Heroes Illustrated number one.
Right.
Where they just mock some letter writer who essentially describes exactly these CGC cases. Somebody recognized the genius in that. The evil genius mind.
And that would have been the time, too, when like the speculative stuff was rife, you know?
Slap your Jim Lee X-Men number one and your Death of Superman.
There's a guy on Kayfabe Ringside Seats like who was showing off like 24 Spawn 9s that they're going to get graded.
And here we are. So here we go. Here's Marvel Mystery number 39 from January of 1943. So what was interesting to me is I'm staring at this cover, okay, and I'm looking at the planes and the tanks, and they're like, well, wait a minute. They're not American. They're not British. They're Russian. Mm. Okay, so here is the Human Torch and Toro fighting with the communists. Now, what do we make of this, okay? Are these guys patsies of Uncle Joe Stalin? I mean, are these... And by the way, I did find out, did some more research. It's another cover I want to go for, where the Human Torch and Toro are battling the Nazis in front of the Kremlin. So they're defending the Kremlin from the Nazis, okay? So I'm surprised that... You know, Senator Joseph McCarthy didn't send anybody who worked on this comic book into like a concentration camp, because here is Human Torch and Toro helping those commie pinko sons and daughters of Uncle Joe Stalin.
Right.
All right. So the cover is by Alex Schomburg.
One of my favorite Golden Age Marvel timely cartoonists.
Well, he worked for both Timely and for Better and Standard publications. So he did stuff like the Black Terror and America's Best Comics and Startling Comics, things like that. He actually, and I've always been meaning to go back to, no one surveyed this about how many Golden Age covers did he really do, all right? Because he did a lot. It's really surprising how many he did. And he was known for these dense scenes with lots of equipment. Okay, you can see all that. In some cases, he has fantastical devices. You know, there's like a couple of dozen people, okay, in fairly decent detail, and you've got tanks, and you've got planes, you've got all this stuff. Just the density of the cover, all right? So, you want to walk through it with me?
I do, but I do also want to make note of the sort of the smart coloring on this, because the only sort of like halftone values on this cover, everything is 100% color, like 100% cyan plate, 100% yellow plate to get the greens and stuff, except for the sky, a little of the schmutz right here, and like a very few other things. But almost every piece of color on this cover is using 100% of the ink to just try to make it be as poppy and vibrant as possible on the stands, and that's very smart.
Oh my God, I love these covers, okay? These World War II Schomburg covers. It's a shame that the last thing I collected from my World War II collection was Golden Age comics, but I would have loved to have 50 or 60 of these. But so it goes. If I win the lottery, I'm going to be competing heavy, all right? So shall we take a look inside?
Yeah.
All right, so should I?
And this is Marvel Mystery Comics number 39.
Number 39.
So if it came out monthly, man, it's just a few years.
Right.
I mean, 1943, it's just a few years January after the introduction of Submariner and the Human Torch.
Right, January of 43. So here is, now, they also had, part of Timely was aimed at the animation market. Okay, so they had these Terry Toons, and they had other kinds of comics that they did that had nothing to do with, let's say, the Human Torch, okay?
Worth noting that the editor-in-chief of this issue is Vincent Fago, who's known for doing these kind of funny animal
well,
comics.
You know, it's interesting. So I read up on Fago, and the wiki page said that he didn't take over. He was doing mainly this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And that according to the wiki page, he didn't take over as the overall editor of Timely until March of 43. This is January of 43. So some more research needs to be done to, you know, so is this really a Vincent Fago book?
Right.
All right. Or because the two data points that we have in terms of knowledge about it are contradicting one another.
Here's one thing that is clear with this Human Torch piece. It is not drawn by Carl Burgos.
No, definitely not. Okay. And oh, by the way, one thing to look at, there's only one staple. Okay.
What cheapos?
Nope, had nothing to...
Metal shortage.
That's right. It had to do with... Because this is January of 43. At this point, we had just landed in North Africa a couple of months before. We were in Guadalcanal. We were just starting to get into the war.
Okay, and with that in mind, the person who kept this comic, they weren't very patriotic because we were supposed to be recycling paper, and there were drives for that as well. So it's an instance, everybody who has that Action Comics number one, they're being rewarded for bad behavior.
That's right. So it's you know, you take a look at this. You don't see this that often, okay, that is pointed out. There's only a single staple holding this together. And I don't know how long that, you know, where it started and where it ended. I've never seen any documentation on it. I know that a lot of the comic publishers, like the DC ones I've seen, from the Golden Age, most of them had two staples. So this is a first for me. I knew about it, but I'd never physically held a single staple. So here we go, Human Torch.
Yeah, the
all right.
The artist is Harry Saul.
Yep, you got me.
Don't know the name, but you know all the Kirby's at war
right
now.
Right.
All the main cartoonists that we know, they're in the theater of war. So
except for Schomburg, because at this time he was, I think, 36 to 37 with a family, so he had an exemption.
Right.
Okay, so Schomburg worked throughout the entire war. All right, so we've got kidnapping.
Great panel right there, kind of hard to see on cam.
Yeah, there we go.
That's an ambitious panel as well.
Yeah, I'll say.
All right, and I'm sure people are going, oh my God, he's like opening the book. He's going to bend stuff. It's like, I don't give a shit. You know, how about this? To make everybody happy, I'll have this buried with me and no one has to worry. And it's the Washington Express. Yeah, look at these. You know, it's really nice seeing these because I've never really, it's been a number of years because I had some Golden Age, but seeing the really nice colors that they're using for the Human Torch and Toro.
I want to point out some of these faces of characters. It was on the splash page, too, of these, like, grotesque exaggerations of facial characteristics. You know, like, you see this leering guy with the big nose, a deformed head on this one.
I like this guy, this, you know.
Like the mole.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, this is Dick Tracy-like in that respect. Yeah.
But also, like, the villains look ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a...
And then, you know, square-jawed android Human Torch form, like, looking like, you know, Joe America.
I don't know why that's in there.
Is that some CGC shit?
I don't know.
A little conspiracy?
It looks acid-free, but, you know, who knows? Yeah, look at these faces. And yeah, the colors on this are really interesting, too. Yeah, you're right about that full cyan.
Yeah, and they'll get more subdued on the inside here. I'm just looking to see, like, what was making those separations, because sometimes they use weird colored zips. Uh-oh, somebody's hitting the end of their deadline. Something tells me that's not a formal experiment.
And then here we go. Now I have Submariner, and that is not Bill Everett.
No.
Well, look at this. What's cooking? Human Torch is cooking up a new adventure now for the Human Torch Quarterly. Don't miss it. Fantastic.
Now, this is a very fun, interesting period of Submariner comics because Bill Everett, you know, set the tone, and he was one of the greatest Golden Age artists by my standards, you know. But the perversion of the Submariner head, it turns into a yield sign eventually as we move closer to the 50s. And you could see it a little bit there. So I'm very excited to see as you turn the pages, like just how angular and pointy that damn head is going to be. Because it gets to the point of like grotesque caricature, to say the least, man.
Now, I want to point out one thing, okay? This is a foreshadowing. These are German potato masher hand grenades.
Oh, right.
These are not American hand grenades, okay?
Right.
So I wonder where these guys are from. And I love this. The Submariner fights, punches, blasts, and blitzes in the case of the blinding lights.
By the way, where is this fellow coming out of? Is he squeezed between two boards on that track? Like,
look at that. The track is even broken right here. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. That's...
Uncle Marty was like, we need one more guy on this cover, on this splash.
All right, here we go. All right, so there, it looks like they're in Coney Island. Look at this. Croaking crocodiles. There's too much noise and too little action around this place. An air raid siren. Snizzling snakes. A blackout. All right.
So you got the air raid. Look at that ominous red sky.
I love that. And the freak show sign. Yeah.
Feldstein, in his early EC comics, would create mood in the sky like that. You know, and you know, that's...
And, yeah. And look how it goes from this sort of purplish to cyan to red, okay? Which...
The circle panels need to make a comeback.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are great.
And the circle panel in my next book.
Good.
So here it is. So this is the parachute tower at Coney Island. You could go up and come down in a parachute.
Imagine taking a Coney Island fucking amusement park ride like that. Like, you know, like, we're just like, nuts. Like, you know, there's, what kind of regulation? Like, amusement parks are 2 years old or some shit. There had to be some learning curves along the way, I think.
Well, Coney Island actually had been there since, like, the late 1890s.
Yeah, but how about a gimmick like that?
Man? Yeah, well, that clearly wasn't, okay? And this is great. Meanwhile, in the Tower of the Parachute Jump, Von Goober, okay?
There
the
it
best
is.
Part is, I don't have to make any of this up. A dangerous fifth columnist directs his men, okay? And, of course, in broken German, all right?
I mean, look at that right there.
Yeah, right, Heil Hitler.
Got the hell.
In just 10 minutes, the Führer's bombers will attack. So it looks like somehow they're going to fly bombers from Germany across the United States and for some reason bomb Coney Island, okay?
It makes perfect sense because, like, do you think a little kid who's reading this is going to care about, you know, the fort, wherever the fuck, where we keep our gold reserves, man? It's like, no, man, they want to go on rides. Of course the bad guys are going to go after, you know.
I love this. Dare. This dialogue is great. Take a good look at my face before you see my fists, okay? So you put those lights on to reveal the short line to Schicklgruber's planes, eh? Nazis rub shoulders. Why don't they rub noses, too, as he smashes these guys' noses together? I'm sorry. This is great.
Before Kirby really crystallized the language, it was a lot of this left to right kind of movement, you know, like Kirby's the guy, like with his foreshortening and stuff, he kind of like started to move things closer to the reader, but before that, man, it was all this like left to right treatment and something that Steve Ditko held on to but still was able to use it to better effect than a lot of
and here's another observation, because I'd never really read a lot of Golden Age Submariner. So here Submariner's saying croaking crocodiles. And here it's galloping guppies. I wonder how many more of these we're going to see.
Yeah.
This explains a lot about Stan Lee. Like he was raised hearing these alliterations.
Here we go. Shimmying shad. All right.
And that's a classic one. That one is established by Bill Everett. You could look at comics by Les Daniels, and that one's in there.
This is funny. What the devil fish?
Yeah, right. What the devil fish, right. I didn't know Nazi rats were romantic because they're going into the tunnel of love. And oh, look at this. I love this. Look at the Nazi planes bombing Coney Island.
No, that's a good one, man.
Yeah, that's really good.
I love this, all right? And of course, there's no American planes in the sky, and somehow they made it, you know, across the Atlantic Ocean. And
now, it makes you wonder, like, did a civilian even know about radar at this moment? Like, is this all, like, held military secrets?
The radar was pretty much a military secret.
Right.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So we didn't even know that and shit was detectable.
And by the way, there's an echo in this. There's a famous World War I poster by Joseph Pinnell from when we first went into World War I. And what it was U-boats and biplanes attacking the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor.
Mm.
All right? So this is not the first war in which New York took the brunt of the German attack.
Right. And there are those famous stories as well of like the... What was the FBI... sort of in league with the mafia to like watch the docks and stuff like.
Oh no, that's a true story.
Sure, yeah.
After the USS Normandy caught on fire, there was supposed to be a big troop ship that would take like 10,000 troops at a time, Fire came out, and basically the FBI went to, oh God, I forgot which bigwig it was.
You don't want to cover your mouth.
It wasn't Meyer Lansky. Anyway, make a long story short, they cut a deal with the mafia, and they said, look, okay, because one of their mafia guys was in Sicily at the time, and I forgot what the deal was, but they cut a deal with the mafia so that the docks of New York would remain safe for the remainder of the war. Okay, true story.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I
like the mood.
Yeah.
In that panel right there.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I love this. Okay, this panel has me. Oh, I'm so glad we
opened it. I like the heart entrance, too.
Yeah.
Just from a nice three-dimensional, you get some depth in that panel. It's kind of nice.
But we need to get Namor topless already, man, or else I want my 10 cents back.
And, of course,
I need to see them little wings on his ankles as well.
Look at this. So of course, there's a U-boat. And so this is him battling the U-boat. And, of course, here are all the Nazi planes. Not an American plane in sight, of course.
We're starting to get into some Caniff textures with the yes. water and stuff.
Yeah.
He was a big influence at this time, certainly for this kind of, you know, like some for sort sure. of military.
Well, also look at how the, you know, just the difference in all the yellows and reds of the fire are gone, and now all of a sudden it's you know, basically grays and blues.
We've gone aquatic.
Right, gone aquatic. But I'm sorry, I don't see any shirtless Submariner here.
I think we'll get there.
there we go. Okay, you got it.
You gotta have it. It's like, you know, not seeing Superman in his uniform.
And there's a good face for you.
Yeah, so it still is abiding by, like, the design that Bill Everett kind of created.
Right.
But it's going to just become, it's going to become more angular, yes. wider at the top.
Right.
Probably into the 50s. And just look like, it turns into almost a cartoon.
What a great name, Von Goober. I'm sorry.
Definitely some Hogan's Alley type, Hogan's Heroes type.
Hogan's Heroes type stuff, yeah. Look at this nice green they bring in with this crash and the Wii. I'm sorry, I like that crash there with the door.
Look at that barrel chest, boy. That's a la Bruno Sammartino, man.
Bruno Sammartino, right. Men,
that's how they would work out back then. And get that big V-shape.
Right.
It's funny to see what is formed and what isn't at this point. Like, I feel like a lot of the lettering, both captions and dialogue, pretty consistent with what we're going to see over the next several decades. Whereas the sound effects, they change a lot. You know, by the time you get to what we think of as Marvel Comics, Marvel Universe, it's a totally different visual vernacular for things like sound effects lettering.
Yeah, we needed the 50s to happen, because you look at those paperbacks and you see, like, title lettering, where the lettering is all different shapes and sizes compared to the next characters and stuff, and just, like, you need that permission.
And, of course, you know, Marvel Universe is 20 years in the future of this, so...
Right.
Like,
yeah, right, sure, yeah.
That's a lot of development, something that's only a few years old genre-wise.
This is great. Sword off swordfish, and bouncing bass. On the same page. So, who, you know, I have to compliment whoever the script writer was for coming up with all of these double names, okay? All right, here we go. So,
and you know what? It's a crying shame that Namor lost that gimmick.
You can always read Aquaman.
Right, you always read Aquaman, right. No use talking, I just can't stomach Nazis. Well, I guess that shows you where Namor was in World War II, which side he was on.
Yeah, even though he's supposed to want everybody to die. But he gets patriotic in certain times.
Oh, the rest of the fifth colonists are in the tunnel of love making goo-goo eyes at each other. So it's lights out for the Hitlerites.
So very wisely, man, we start off with a bang. The two heavy hitters that Marvel had, with the exception of Captain America, you know, Human Torch and Namor.
And Namor, right, exactly.
The two characters that were introduced into this comic with issue number one. And now...
And by the way, that issue number one, okay, let's not forget that the illustrator of that cover was Frank R. Paul, who was the science fiction, okay, tying into Alex Schomburg, who went into science fiction... Well, he was in science fiction before he did comics. Then he really got into it once the Golden Age kind of leveled down. So now...
This is timely throwing things at the wall to see what sticks. And I don't think even Kurt Busiek knows who Jimmy Jupiter is.
Noteworthy is the creative team is all one guy, Ed Robbins, who is both writing, penciling, and inking. So you might get a little bit of a different flavor where it's one person's work, one vision.
Well, and also it showed you... what happened when all those people went off to war.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. It's like, you know, the people.
I wonder
who stay
how
back.
Old this guy was when he, you know, he might have been 17.
These are big questions that I've had for a long time, and just nobody can answer. Like, you know, who are these guys? Like, did they have a club foot or something that prevented them from going to war? Were they kids?
Right.
This is clearly inspired by, like, I would say, C.C. Beck. Batson kind of character.
And the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And isn't this Crocodile, didn't Walt Kelly do this around this time also in was it Disney comics?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, and the Turtle.
Yeah, so it's largely a mashup. This guy's lost to the ages, just like, you know, the 80s anthropomorphic money grab comic people. You know, this is just a mashup with no particular vision. You know, this is Disney inspired, these ladies right here. So this guy's just trying to take everything in the popular culture at the time and try to make a hit. Pure business.
Right. And I'd also be curious to see how long he lasted at, you know, doing this, how many issues this particular guy worked in, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
He wanted to grow into become a madman.
Oh, wait a minute. But the two friends are not there yet. Next month, they see more of the amazing things Fairyland has in store for all in Marvel Comics. So this must have been,
Ran a little bit,
yeah. All right, let's see what else we have.
Although, don't believe every ad you read.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
It'd be better if it said last issue.
All right, this is how we get postage rates, man. We got to pretend that we're an actual magazine.
Yeah. Marvel Mystery Comics published monthly at Meridian, Connecticut for October 1st, 1942.
Does that have the circulation in that edition?
No, I don't see it. No, I'd be curious. And by the way, it's interesting you mentioned circulation. So there's been a number of books that have said during the Golden Age, during World War II, there were 40, 50 million comics that were put out. All right? The problem is if you try to track that down, you can't get the places that said it in, you know, at that time in the 1940s, if you go back to those books and you see the number on the page, there's no footnote about where they got that number.
Yeah.
Okay. So
there would be those comics. There must have been something legally in the 70s and 80s when there would be that one like postage page where it would have like a little form letter and then talk about the circulation.
You know what I'm talking about?
And that would be far more clear, and then that's where you see, you know, the inflated numbers of newsstand where they have to print up 250,000 in order to sell 100,000.
Right. Now I went back. There's a book called Ayres Newspapers and Periodicals that was put out every year, you know, starting in the early 1900s through, I think, well, at least into the 60s and 70s. And in there, it gave the circulation of every newspaper and magazine. So when I was doing research for my World War II book, I was already in there looking for Saturday Evening Post and Life. And so I was like, gee, I wonder what Superman is. And I wonder what Captain Marvel was. There are no numbers in there. Okay. So it's unclear, you know, if it's the best you've got, it's the best you've got in terms of airs. But I'd just be curious to hear from somebody to say, oh, okay, we did the research. Here's where we got the data that said that this is what was being published, you know, whatever it may be. But I've never seen any of that. So, all right, ready?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. And by the way, Faith Moreland, so it's, you know, not all guys.
I bet you anything that's a pen name.
And here we go, The Patriot. Now, who's doing this one?
Al Figali.
Figali. I don't know why his name is familiar. It sounds like the guy, Shorten and Figali, who did a single panel cartoon. But who knows? Oh, look, The Patriot is fighting, guess what?
Saboteurs, man.
Based on this, I'd have to say it's Germans again, okay?
And there's tremendous evil, real evil in the world.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But when you read these Golden Age comics, it's all fucking saboteurs, man.
Right.
This is a good-looking strip. That splash panel, I think, is really nice figure work, but you see these little style flourishes, and just the finishing of that panel is really nice.
Yeah, that has the Milk Caniff vibes, but look at that, man. That's the Jaime Hernandez flannel texture.
Yes.
Where you don't go around the contour of the shapes of the body.
Oh, right.
You just go straight. You know, that's Hank Ketchum.
Right. I think Don Flowers, I think, did that also. So this is another one.
And look, man, this is a fashionable term in the culture right now about licking boots.
Yeah, someday you will lick my boots. Okay. So this is Canadian. Because it says up here, the scene shifts to a Canadian prison camp. Another prisoner from England, sir, Lieutenant Carl Mueller, the famous Nazi ace, bring him in. Later, oh, okay, so the Patriots going undercover into a Canadian prisoner of war camp. Oh, okay.
They flog you with maple leaves.
Waterboard you with maple syrup.
And then put a t-shirt on top of you. Like, that's enough to torture a motherfucker. have some maple syrup on your chest and put clothes on top.
So this is, and so Jeff, alias Mueller, alias the Patriot. Oh, I see. So he goes in. Oh, I see what's going on now. So he went in, found this guy, is taking his place.
It really looked like on the splash page that we saw like a down shot of like a costume, but I'm starting to feel like why would you not sell the costume a bunch when you only have 8 pages or something?
It has to be a costume, though. Ridiculous what he's wearing.
Keep going, Warren.
All right.
Yeah, so I think I see wings on that chest.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So let's see. So here we go. And then
I like that scuba.
Here we go. There it is.
Oh, that's so weak.
All right, here it is. As the two men struggle, Jeff's shirt is torn open. The costume of the Patriot.
Canada could keep him.
You know what that means, Krause. Better behave or...
He shoots him in the face point blank. That's pretty hardcore for a kid's comic.
We're going to have to send out one to Dr. Wortham.
Look, my fave was The Death of the Brow in Dick Tracy. Do you know about that one?
I read it, but I can't recall it.
So the Brow was a Nazi saboteur, fifth columnist, all right? And they were fighting at the top of a building, and Dick Tracy knocks the Brow off the building, and the Brow is impaled on a flagpole behind an American Legion memorial for World War I. Okay? And the last scene shows the memorial and, like, the Brow's two legs peeking out from behind the memorial, kind of still twitching, okay?
Look at that Buck Rogers helmet.
Yeah,
isn't it? I'm offended by that.
Now, as the chief of the Underground Railroad, you can now supply me with the names of Nazi flyers planted in our plane factories. So it was saboteurs. Let's see if this is great. I can't wait to... Vision.
Vision.
This is... Yeah, one of the ones that got remade in the Silver Age.
Yeah, whenever those copyrights were about to lapse, man. So we got to bring back Namor. We got to bring back Human Torch.
Right.
We got to bring back Vision.
Right.
It's a beautiful splash page. Yeah. Nice title lettering and framing with that skeleton.
Yeah. No, that is a really nice splash page. See, this is the reason why I got to open a goddamn comic book.
You got to read your comics. Got to let them breathe, man.
Pretty trippy panel borders, too.
Yeah,
the wobble.
No,
yeah.
This is really nice. That is a great... And look at this, like, Dick Tracy, red, blue, yellow, green, just, you know, those Dick Tracy colors.
All the poppy colors, man. Yeah. Use as few subdued tones as possible.
Here we go. There's the Vision. This is great. I'll do it alone, smoke face. Yow, my hand. Hurt yourself?
How much better does the Vision look than the Patriot?
A million times.
Yeah.
Every now and then, these panels remind me of, like, Charles Burns, or even, like, the panels that he'll redraw, you know, and show, like, the originals.
Agreed.
There's a lot of those panels in these comics, and especially with this Vision character, it feels like that'd be a fun Charles Burns drawing.
Yeah, agreed.
These are great. I wonder why the...
Yeah.
The curvy lines on this.
Because Vision, he's, like, a surrealistic kind of character.
Okay.
Even those vary, though, from time to time. Like, here we have almost, you know, like a jagged line.
Yeah, here's kind of the jagged. Yeah, so I'll have to sit down and actually read it, okay?
I don't know if you're going to find a narrative reason for those choices. They're kind of intriguing, but I don't see any obvious reason.
Look at this, the big American flag behind the judge. I mean, this is
a pretty good-looking story.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I really like this one. It looks great. I hope it reads half as well as it looks. Let's drive Hitler to his doom. Be ready by lots of war stamps. Now, the war stamps were 10 cent, 25 cent. They were aimed at kids, okay? So that you could buy a number of stamps and then save them up and trade them in for a war bond. So, all right. So, Terry Vance, the schoolboy sleuth. Who does this one?
Bob Osner.
Oh, no, wait. Yes, the Bob Oxner. And so Oxner, all right, you know, everyone knows, or at least a lot of people know, that he did Bob Hope and he did Jerry Lewis and all that kind of stuff. What's amazing to me is how many years those books ran.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, hundreds of issues.
Hundreds of issues, okay? Now, and oh, by the way, if you want to try collecting something really rare, try collecting like a complete set of Jerry Lewis.
Right.
Okay. It's you know, I've been to enough comic book conventions. They just don't show up. A complete set of Bob Hopes, a complete set of Sergeant Bilko, okay, Private Doberman. They even had a Private Doberman comic. Okay?
Dobie Gillis, I've seen it all.
Dobie
man.
Gillis, right, exactly. And those are legitimately rare books to try to assemble into a set. And here's, I guess, pretty much where he started. I don't know how old he was when he did this.
That was the word, too, you know, like all the A-list cartoonists go off to war, and he's the name that comes up as being like one of the wartime cartoonists.
So here we are, Bob Oxner, before Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin and Bob Hope.
Ah, the four-tier page. Maybe he wanted to work at Detective Comics.
You know, I should have brought one or two with me. So before comic books came along, when George Harriman went to the tabloid color pages, he used a lot of circles.
Yeah.
Okay, in his Sunday pages, which was very unusual at that time because pretty much everyone had gone to the 12 or 9 or however, you know, the very, very formalized format. And Harriman was the last one left in the 30s into the 40s that didn't prescribe by that at all. So you couldn't take any of his Sunday pages and like cut them in half or do whatever. But he used a lot of this stuff. I'd be curious whether or not any of these guys actually read Crazy Cat.
I'm sure they aspired to.
You know, also, by this point, the Crazy Cat was only in a handful of newspapers in the United States.
I was going to say, it's not like it was very popular at the time, although it might have been amongst artists.
Yeah, there's artists at all times.
And this is kind of nice, breaking up the panels with different shapes.
Interesting composition there.
Yeah, this is another nice-looking story. And whenever they do go with like a wide panel like that...
We've seen very few of those.
The draftsmanship's strong in this.
Yeah, yeah.
You get a nice depth whenever he goes widescreen, as you might hear in the 2000s.
And this is nice. Let me see. So here's more. We electrolyze seawater into chlorine gas, which will discharge through our smokestack. The Fuhrer is clever. No, you dirty Nazi. God, I love this stuff. Terry Vance will be back in the next Marvel comics.
And Terry, I mean, it's Terry and the Pirates. Like most,
yeah, sure,
most,
right, yeah.
Most of this stuff, like I see the Caniff on almost every one of these strips.
Yeah. This is great. Meanwhile, Dr. Watson says, let's make monkeys out of the Japs. Buy war stamps and bonds today. So every opportunity they got, this was social manipulation.
Totally. Just propaganda to
right.
the kids,
very
you know?
Unified message.
Yeah.
As we were growing up, we had G.I. Joe.
And here's the angel. The case of the missing fisherman. Look at this thing. They're slicing this guy open.
Yeah, flaying him up,
okay.
man.
Okay. Oh, my God, look at that.
Great textures. Great textures on that lizard skin.
Oh, my God, look at that. They're like slicing his skin. Oh, my God, that's gross.
It's the death of 1,000 paper cuts.
Oh, my God. This is worthy of Red Room.
Yeah, okay. Totally. Those are very, like, Wolverton-esque kind of creatures. Ooh, with webbed fingers.
Right, with webbed fingers, yeah.
It's a good touch. And of course, Angel was introduced in Marvel Comics #1 as well. So maybe they're trying to end strong. Kazar was in Marvel #1 also.
This is great. You look mighty fishy to me.
And look at the reflection of this house in the water.
Yeah.
And then they zoom in on the reflection part.
Yeah, that's nice.
And it's just like Clark Gable in pajamas.
Or Errol Flynn.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a happy guy.
You would get a lot of this in these early comics where there would be like the quote-unquote realistic superhero guy and then these like very cartoony aliens and stuff.
Oh, this is great. Look at this. So what they're doing is they captured these guys and they're filleting their skin to go ahead and graft onto themselves, okay?
Wow. Frederick Wortham was right, yo.
This is great.
And then you just, like, look at, like, with that knowledge, and you see that, you don't know that that arm is, like, tucked under the table. That could look like you just cut him off at the wrists.
That's the, you know, so.
Frederick Wortham was right.
Man. I mean, some, you know, 8-year-old kid and parents give you this comic book. And
it's
this,
awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. And like, you know, on, I don't know if on Honeymooners, if Ralph Cramden was even allowed to be seen sharing a bed with his wife.
No, actually, they all had...
Two beds.
And actually, that's the way a lot of married couples... Because I remember my grandparents, they all their bedrooms, the two bedrooms, both my grandparents, were both single beds with a nightstand in between. Okay, that's just the way it was back then. So that was not unusual. Here we go.
This is the first story that's not connected to World War II?
No, second.
Okay.
And look at that kayfabe maneuver right there. Little leg scissors.
Look at that. Then he flips them over. Great.
That's taken for granted that alien anatomy is the same as man. So we're trying to cut off that carotid.
Right.
But the carotid in the alien could be in the elbow for all we know.
Oh, finishes up with Captain America. Yes.
And he's like, you know, he's too big a character to be part of this. They don't want to overexpose him.
So I want to become a member of Cap Sentinels. That's a great ad. I've not seen this one before.
Yeah. And of course, what this is like every effort to try to get your mailing address so that we could send you
subscription
info and,
right.
You know, junk mail.
I always love this font.
Yeah, it's called Balloon.
Persists well into like 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
I always think of the Ken Langriff comics as using that. That was something that was on like a, I'm going to say a label maker, but that's not quite the right term for it. But you would see you could generate like equivalent of typeset type on this machine. And you can still find them on like eBay and stuff, but that was one of like maybe 11 fonts or something that you could find for it.
I use that font to good health in some of my Hip Hop Family Tree single issue splashes and stuff.
That Captain America really is a contemporary-looking Captain America.
Yeah.
You know, like...
He's
like
always been there.
They worked it all out pretty early on.
Yep.
And then here we go. Let me see.
It's a BB gun and it cost a buck.
Wait a minute. Attention. Now, here's Uncle Sam with the soldier, with the little boy, with his BB gun. His Daisy Commando BB gun. Okay? And notice it's called a Daisy Commando. All right, it's not like some kind of Western thing. It's like
a lack of underwear thing. We know Commando.
So and there we have it. There is a walkthrough Marvel Mystery number 39, and I hope not too many people fainted out there from seeing us desecrate a Golden Age comic.
We didn't desecrate anything, man. CGC desecrated it by cutting its air supply off.
Oh my God!
By slabbing it.
And this is a nice shape comic. See, it's a single staple. Okay. Oh, this is okay.
Yeah.
See, I don't mind leafing through something like this. This
just amazing that this thing lasted in this condition
for
as long as it has, man.
Right.
Jim and I, like, when we talk about the era of our own personal sweet spots in comics, and we still have the comics that we got when we were 8, 9 years old, it ain't in that condition.
Well, and you know, you're right. It also went through, because this came out in like basically, I think, late 1942, most probably December 42, somewhere thereabouts. And so there was still 2.5 more years of paper drives.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so somebody's being naughty.
All right. So someone stashed these somewhere. And I'm sorry, I love this. The Human Torch and Toro helping the commies. Right. And that's why I got this. So.
I just like with, to continue my thread, I just have to imagine that the good copies and clean copies of comics, like even at this grade or whatever, I think it must prove that, you know, adults were reading comics like even back then, because I can't imagine a kid keeping a comic like that nice when the whole idea of comics like for little kids is like roll it up in your back pocket,
right? Sure.
Right next to your slingshot and shit like that.
Right.
Like, this was a well taken care of magazine.
Yep. Nope, it's not bad at all. And I can't wait to read it word balloon by word balloon.
Well, you know what? You should get to that, man. And we're going to tell the kayfabers to like, follow, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell icon so that we can notify you when new videos are available. And you want to do that because that mitigates the kayfabe effect. Now, this comic, no matter what grade, probably going to cost you a couple dollars, man. But when we do our videos, you want to mitigate that kayfabe effect, because the next day, the comic we talk about that costs $5 on eBay becomes $25.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe merchandise and t-shirts at the links below this video. Read more comics.